This is Allison Bailey, Chair of the Cardiovascular Management Section Leadership Council at the American College of Cardiology. The Cardiovascular Management Section is very pleased to host this podcast series, Practice Made Perfect, which will focus on non-clinical competencies related to leadership skills, professional identity, operational skills, and personal balance. We hope you'll join us every other week as we learn from experts in the field who will remind us that practice really does make perfect.
Today, we're going to be talking about change management, the subtle skills for success. I'm thrilled to be talking with Dr. Athena Pappas, Dr. Richard Kovacs, and Dr. Jerry Blackwell on the podcast today. As you guys all know, we're living in a very dynamic medical environment with near constant change, from healthcare system design to reimbursement, and most recently, a global pandemic. Not only do we have all these factors, but cardiology itself changed significantly over the last decade and requires tons of flexibility. Today, we'll be focusing on change management skills and how to incorporate these very important skills into our life. So I'd like to welcome our guests to the show. First is Dr. Athena Pappas. Dr. Pappas currently serves as president of the American College of Cardiology. She's also the chief of cardiology at Brown University and director of the Lifespan Cardiovascular Institute at Rhode Island, the Miriam and Newport Hospitals. Welcome, Athena.
Thank you, Allison. It's really a pleasure to be here. This is quite a timely topic, and I'm eager to hear what Jerry and Dick have to say as well.
Also joining us is Dr. Richard Kovacs, who's the immediate past president of the college. Dr. Kovacs has been and remains very involved with the American College of Cardiology throughout his career. He currently serves as the clinical director, Cranard Institute of Cardiology, and the service line leader for cardiology at Indiana University Health. Welcome to the show, Dick.
Happy to be here, Allison. Look forward to the discussion.
And last, but certainly not least, is Dr. Jerry Blackwell. Jerry has practiced cardiology for over 30 years in a variety of settings, including academic cardiology, private practice, and a large integrated cardiovascular group leadership. Most recently, he served as executive vice president and chief of clinical officer at Ballad Health System in Kingsport, Tennessee. He's been actively involved with the ACC throughout his career and currently serves as the president of MedAxiom. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Allison, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here and particularly honored to be with Athena and Dick. This should be fun.
Great. So again, thank you all for joining us and sharing your tips for negotiating change management in this dynamic environment we live in. So you all obviously figured out how to lead a successful life based on where you currently are in your career. I look forward to hearing more about how we can learn from these experiences that you guys have had. So becoming a leader is more than just a job title, as anyone in leadership knows. It requires certain skills to effectively lead a team. Jerry, can you tell us what you think the most important skills are in this regard?
Sure, Allison, thanks. I think there are a variety of things. There's been a tremendous amount written about this, legitimate scholarship as well as common sense. I think that communication is always very important in any sort of leadership position, but I really do believe that the most important factors relate to a willingness to serve. In other words, the notion of servant leadership. There are certainly examples where leaders can be very divorced from the topics that they're dealing with, but in general, my experience has been, and certainly the people that have impacted me most, are those people that I recognized immediately, and it doesn't take long, you really can recognize it very quickly, that they have a willingness to serve. I think the next thing that I view as very valuable and certainly has served me well, both in my journey and those that I've worked with, is the notion of authenticity. Because again, if you make it clear to folks that A, you're willing to serve, and that B, your approach to this, what you do, is authentic, it really breaks down many, many barriers, and I have found that useful. There's many other adjectives that can describe this, and I look forward to hearing what Athena and Dick have to say about it. But I really do believe that it boils down to a willingness to serve and folks seeing you as authentic in what it is that you're trying to convey, the leadership direction that you're taking folks.
Jerry, I think that's really great insight, and I agree with you totally, as I do on most things. Dick, do you think these skills are the same in healthcare as they are in other industries, or is there separate things that we need to do as leaders in medicine?
Well, I think there are many similarities, and I agree with Jerry on the notion of authenticity, servant leadership, understanding your individual leadership style, being able to build consensus, listen carefully to the other voices. But those of us, especially physicians who are asked to lead in medicine, I think we also have the additional burden of bringing clinical credibility. There are reasons that we're asked to be leaders in medicine. And I think if we don't have solid clinical credibility, I think we don't bring as much to the table as leaders. And then finally, many of us bring a very, very broad perspective to our leadership styles. And as you mentioned, the rapid change in medicine and cardiology is a worldwide phenomenon. And so being able to see across, not only within the United States, but outside of the United States, to bring that broad perspective is also one of the special skills that we need to bring.
That's really great advice and insight, Dick. And I agree. You know, I think one of the things that makes me love the college so much is our patient focus. We always talk about, you know, we're all here to make sure that we provide the very best care for our patients. And Athena, as a chief, I'm sure you interact with both the medical team and the business and administrative teams very frequently. Do you think there are special skills that are necessary to be able to relate to both the healthcare team that we're a part of, as well as the administrators of medicine?
No, I think it's an excellent question. And both Dick and Jerry's comments are pertinent here, you know, in particular, being authentic. That will resonate not only with your colleagues who are in the healthcare team, but administrators as well. And I think, as Dick pointed out, being a good communicator, listening, and focus on the patient. And I think this last point, when there's disagreement, if you can bring it back to why we're really here, and that is about the patient and patient care, it seems to dissolve a lot of concerns sometimes and refocus the conversation. So I think those comments are pertinent for that dyad relationship. And the dyad relationship becomes quite important in understanding that people bring different things to the table, an administrator and the business background and a physician with the clinical background and skill set and insights. And I think understanding, respecting, and valuing any type of a relationship is very important. And so thinking of it from that vein also brings better communication and better working relationships. And lastly, something that was said to me, which has resonated for quite some time, and that is to understand the difference between literate in a subject and being an expert. So I may be an expert in echocardiography or cardiology, but I will only probably be literate in the business of medicine. And I can become more literate by some of the numerous offerings that ACC and MedAxiom bring and the CV Summit, for example. And the converse is true. Administrators will become literate in the language, for example, of cardiology or other medicine, but may not become experts. And that really has helped me to focus.
Okay, I think that is really smart words from someone who's been doing this for a while and really, you know, rose to the top ranks by your skill set. In this world of medicine and cardiology, we recognize how important it is to work as part of a multidisciplinary team and that change is inevitable across all aspects of our lives. How we manage this change sometimes helps determine our success as a leader or our failure as a leader. Where does a member of the healthcare team go to learn more about these skills? Are there resources available from the college or books you'd recommend? Dick, do you want to take this one?
Sure, Allison. The college has really upped its game in providing resources to the membership. Certainly, the most common resource is just that informal mentoring and that interaction with your colleagues that the college is famous for, collegiality in sharing your knowledge with others. But now we have formal programs. We have a leadership academy. This is focused at our best and brightest. Is a highly competitive program to get into, but still is a formal way of developing new leaders for the college and the institutions that they serve. And there's an international leadership academy as well. But I think the widely utilized mode is the CV Summit, where once a year, our second most attended meeting for the college behind the annual meeting itself presents an enormous opportunity to take a deeper dive into the practice of medicine from all aspects, but especially from developing leaders for the practice of medicine. So those are three great opportunities that the college has.
Okay, great. Thanks for sharing those valuable resources the college has. And I agree. I think CV Summit is one of the most underrated meetings that we have as a college because it always has continuous and new information. Jerry, you've been on both sides of the healthcare team as well, both as a team member and practicing a clinician, as well as in leadership positions. How do you promote an environment of collaboration among all members of the team? What tips do you have for us there?
Allison, I think that much of what Athena said, what Dick said, what I said early on about leadership, these things are all going to continue to circle back as it relates to most of the things we're going to discuss here on the leadership side of things. I think the most important thing, arguably, for bridging this gap between both sides of the healthcare team, the administrative side and the clinical side, is trust. And how do you build trust? You build trust by listening to folks, having them understand that you really want to learn from them, making it clear that you want to give of yourself. You know, I think that Dick's comment about continuing to practice, I think one of the things that's certainly been very helpful to me on the leadership side and bridging the gap is that the administrative folks, as well as the clinical folks, see that I continue to practice. It allows me to provide a little bit more of the voice of the customer. On the other hand, one of the things that I very quickly realized as I started doing more of this is there's so much of this that other people are far more expert than me and our colleagues in cardiology about. It gets to Athena's point about the very important difference between expertise and literacy. And so what I have tried to spend a lot of time doing is bridging that gap so that I can become literate and can, with a trust factor, help the two sides communicate. I am reminded frequently of a quote that I think was attributed to Will Rogers, who said, everybody's ignorant only on different subjects. And I try to think of those subjects where really, you know, I am not only an expert, but barely literate, and try to learn from that. And I think that when we, particularly as practicing clinicians with the blessed profession that we're in, when we make it clear to the administrative side of folks that we truly are there to learn and to advance in both directions, I have found that that's very effective. It gets down to the point of dyad leadership. And I think most of us that have done this for quite some time or been very committed to this realize that the biggest value does come from team play and from the notion of dyads at every point along the way, administrative and clinically. This is a complex puzzle that's not going to have a simple solution. The things that we look for in medicine and ways we try to make it better to redesign care, to deal with a complex macro environment, require complex solutions. And that requires folks with varying skill sets that trust each other and are willing to work together.
And I think that's really great advice on building a cohesive team and sort of what it takes to make things work. But obviously, we're human, so discord's going to happen, and conflict management's an inevitable part of leadership. How do you handle situations where there is conflict, whether it's interpersonal or between different parts of the team? Athena, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point and a place where most of us feel most uncomfortable. So I think to Jerry and Dick's point as well, finding those places where you have a knowledge gap and trying to fill that with books, online webinars, or things such as a CV Summit are crucial. So recognizing that conflict management is where most of us are going to feel uncomfortable and learning some skills. So for example, the book Crucial Conversations is useful. Mike Valentine had utilized that at, again, some of our CV Summits, and I learned a lot from that. But I think with some concrete examples of how to do that, it's finding common ground, particularly if it's between people, because usually it's something around the edges that's concerning them. But I think finding out what the concerns are and then where the commonalities are, and having people understand that there is no winners usually in this, but finding compromise is important. The other thing that took me a while to understand was taking apart what the concerns are. Is it the goals that they aren't agreeing on, or is it the tactics, or both? Because you might approach those different concerns from a different management response, whether it's bringing people along, if it's the vision that they need to understand, if it's the tactics, sometimes there's different procedures and other people you might bring in. If it's both, sometimes you have to be a little more heavy-handed to bring people along. But whether it's teams or individuals, I think in person, and I think you can still do that these days with masks or verbally, but email is usually not the way to solve conflict either. So that's one pearl I've learned the hard way.
Well, I think this has been great. And I know I've certainly learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have. I'd like to sort of round out our conversation today by asking if there is one piece of advice you'd like to give our listeners that we haven't talked about yet regarding change management. Dick, I'll let you go first and see what your thoughts are here.
Well, Jerry quoted Will Rogers, and I'm going to sort of mutilate a quote from Mark Twain that I'm very fond of. I'm all for progress. It's change I can't stand. So I think change is hard, and we naturally resist some changes. But I think focusing on the progress to be made, especially focusing on the patient and the patient goals, makes some of these conversations, some of these debates a little easier.
Great. I love that quote, too. That's wonderful. Athena, how about you? Any last words?
I don't have a witty quote, unfortunately, but I do think that what's been said is crucial to understand that if we think about the patient and even recreating org charts around the patient can really help. And also the why. And the why might be around the patients, but the why of what we're doing something. We're changing schedules because it will be better for the patients and better for the providers. We're changing call schedules. And then I think the other piece is bringing people along so that they don't find out after the fact, but have input into the process. So both getting the why and then making sure that both on the administrative and provider side, they feel they've had input into that change.
I think that is so important in every aspect of our life and not just our job. So that's great advice. And then last but certainly not least, Jerry, do you have any last words you'd like to add?
Well, first, I'll thank you, Allison. And again, just listening to Athena and Dick, it's just a reminder of the depth and breadth of the college and why many of us love to be involved with the college and have been for years. But you know what I would just say is that once again, it's very important to, I think, understand that there's two things that serve us well in this area. One is scholarship. On many of these topics, there's a variety of stuff written about them if we're willing to take it on. And then the second thing, and I think this is vital, I'll keep coming back to it, is common sense. And I'll just say oftentimes with younger folks, I go to a quote that I love that says, no written word, no spoken plea can teach our students what they should be, nor all the books on all the shelves. It's what the leaders are themselves. And that in some ways haunted me, but reminded me that when the final horn goes off, what you show to others, what you are, that ends up making the difference.
Wow. Great ending quote, Jerry. I love it. I'd like to thank you guys so much for being on the podcast today. This has been such an informative topic and so relevant, I think, to all aspects of our lives right now. Thank you, Athena, Dick, and Jerry.
Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks for having us.
This is Allison Bailey, and thanks for joining us today. Please be sure to join us online at acc.org or on iTunes or Google Play to subscribe to Practice Made Perfect. We hope you'll join us next time as we discuss more on how practice really does make perfect.